Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Do you still believe the Pope's position on condoms is hurting people in the name of Jesus?
I do. He's simply incorrect in his assertion.
Many Catholics, understandably, are outraged.
I'm just going to make up my own view of things.
But there's a lot more to his story, believe me.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Paganism, pagan power, going to come back.
Quite honestly, I wouldn't worry myself about that.
Your show, as an example, is so needed.
Dear buddy, I like you already.
Could someone need a hug?
I'm giving you a hug right off the bat.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you. We've got another hour talking about the things that matter most. Coming up, His Eminence, Francis Cardinal Arinze, will be with me. We'll talk a little bit about the priesthood. We'll talk about where the church is growing in the world. And I'll also be joined happily by the host of Bookmark, Chief Operating Officer of EWTN, Doug Keck, who is in town, actually in town for the same reason that Cardinal Arinze is. And that's the Holy Trinity Apostolate's 13th Annual Lenten Symposium, which takes place tomorrow. We're all going to be at. And hope that you'll be there as well. You can learn more by going to AveMariaRadio.net. We have all the information posted there in the Cresta Guest Archives. That's AveMariaRadio.net. So that's coming up this hour. Also, today we go in and see if Tim Burton has destroyed Alice in Wonderland. Tim Burton, not one of my favorite directors, but nevertheless talented and worth comment. Stephen Gordonis joins us later in today's program, and so we'll be spending time taking a look at this new treatment of a beloved what do we call that, a fable?
Fairy tale.
It's kind of an early fantasy, I think. Fantasy story. So that's coming up in this hour of Crest in the Afternoon. And I look forward to being with you with a few comments of my own. So all that coming up. But first, let's hit the headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al, and a good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. It is Friday, March 5th. The saint of the day is St. John Joseph of the Cross. Today's news is brought to you in part by Siena Communications at ProLifeCatholic.com. Congress is moving towards final votes on health care reform in the next few weeks. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she remains very confident about finalizing health care reform soon.
But we take it a new vote every time. This is every legislative vote is a heavy lift around here. You assume nothing in terms of where you were before and where people may be now.
Pelosi was bold enough to brush off concerns by pro-life Democrats that the legislation is not strict enough about prohibiting federal funding of abortion. It is becoming more and more likely that accused 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four of his alleged co-conspirators will be prosecuted by a military tribunal rather than in civilian court. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican of South Carolina, says he thinks most Americans would be supportive of that move.
I think it would be welcome news by most Americans that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would not be tried in New York City, miles away from the attack site of 9/11, given the same constitutional rights as an American citizen.
Attorney General Eric Holder previously announced plans to hold the trials at a federal courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Multiple reports say President Obama and his advisors are close to making the recommendation that the trials be moved back to military turf. Obama had initially favored trying Mohammed and other terrorism suspects in civilian courts. Toyota officials are denying that repairs made on recalled vehicles for unintended acceleration don't work. U.S. regulators say they have over 60 complaints about the vehicles under review. Toyota maintains a partial review of complaints found no evidence of failure in the electronic throttle system or the repairs that were made. The National Highway Traffic Safety Association has requested the company turn over information about any vehicle owner dissatisfaction. Some thieves apparently studied the movie Mission Impossible very closely to carry out a brazen caper. Officials believe that the group got into a New Jersey Best Buy store early Thursday morning by shimmying up a glass pipe and cutting a hole in the roof. They then dropped down gas pipe, that is, and then they cut a hole in the roof. They then dropped down long racks to swipe up to $26,000 worth of laptops and avoided touching the floor to set off motion sensors. The crew also blocked themselves on security cameras using hanging store banners. And finally, the chairman and founder of the American Family Association is resigning. CitizenLink is reporting that Donald Wildman, who began the AFA in 1977, is stepping down. Wildman contracted the St. Louis virus and was hospitalized for several months, and during his hospital stay also underwent surgery for cancer on his left eye. Wildman said he will continue working in the ministry that his son Tim is expected to lead. The American Family Association has grown to 175 employees and has an annual budget of $20 million. And now your fascinating fact for the day. The best-selling Crayola crayon box is the set of 24 crayons. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now is Doug Keck, COO, Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President of EWTN, who's going to be working with me, co-hosting this segment. Doug is in town for the 13th Annual Holy Trinity Apostolate Lenten Symposium, Charity in Truth. He'll be speaking at it. And our chief guest during this segment, Francis Cardinal Arinze. Cardinal Arinze is Prefect Emeritus of the Congregation of Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, ordained a bishop, consecrated a bishop in 1965 in Nigeria, and 2 years later became Archbishop of the Diocese. On October 1st, 2002, he was nominated Prefect of the Congregation of Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, and created and proclaimed Cardinal by John Paul II in the consistory of May 25th, 1985, and Your Eminence, a great pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
I thank you for inviting me.
And Doug, good to see you.
Always a pleasure, Al. Thank you so much for inviting me.
This is the year for priests, and I always like to ask, well, why? What was the Holy Father's intention in declaring a year for priests?
Well, our faith is rich. We human beings cannot think of everything at once, at the same time. Therefore, the Holy Father helps us to focus attention. So there was 1 year, Pope John Paul II said, okay, the year of the Holy Eucharist. Mm-hmm. Isn't it beautiful that after that, the Pope would declare a year for priests? Just before that, a year for St. Paul, right. Anniversary of his centenary in short. So it's simply in order to focus the attention of the whole church on the priesthood.
As you travel, is the priesthood understood very differently around the world?
No one statement would be valid for the whole world, because the world is big.
Yes.
And even in the same country, you will appreciate that some people will understand the priesthood more than others. Uh-huh. How many people see the priest primarily as representative of Christ, right, who is head of the church and shepherd of the church, who gave his life as a ransom for many, as the evangelists tell us, and Isaiah the prophet. And Christ has himself arranged that there be priests in his church, so that the central mysteries of our salvation would be continued, especially in the Holy Eucharist, popularly called the Mass. No priest, no Mass. Yeah. And also to forgive sins in the name of Christ and the church, and to preach the Word of God, not as an opinion, but as the word of the Lord, to tell people why they are on earth, what they are to believe, what they are to do or not to do, in order that their life on earth may be a success. Because our faith is not a question of if, may,
right.
Yes, perhaps, opinion poll. No, no. We know in whom we have believed. So, we need secure teaching. For all that, Christ has instituted the priesthood. It is not the Vatican that put it together. It is Christ himself.
Right. When you look at the world today, with its increased communication, everybody becoming more aware of different cultures, where is the Catholic Church most growing, most alive, most... where do we see the future of the Church on earth?
Only divine providence will supply us an adequate answer to your question. Nevertheless, with our weak human brains, we can say, from point of view of the history and the richness of tradition, the place around the Mediterranean Sea has been where the Catholic faith has had its center. It began in Jerusalem, we must not forget.
Mm-hmm.
But soon, St. Peter went to Antioch, and then he ended up in Rome, and he and St. Paul were martyred in Rome. So, the successor of St. Peter has been the leader in the name of Christ. Nevertheless, the church spread, and parts of America were known to Europeans. The Europeans called it discovered, that they discovered America 500 years ago, more or less. And then they also said that they discovered parts of Africa south of Sahara. Yes.
Africa didn't know it was lost.
No, I myself discovered the United States of America in 1973. And I discovered Rome in 1955. So, in any case, what has happened now is that the areas of Asia and parts of Africa and Latin America are more or less where the church is growing more. It's interesting. Europe, the church is there for centuries, but gives some signs of tiredness, if we may use that word. And the statisticians tell us that in Africa, the percentage growth for Christianity, not just for Catholicism, but Christianity, is highest of all the continents in the world. With all the problems of Africa, the percentage growth for Christianity is the highest by any continent. That means in Africa, it is good news to become a Christian.
Yeah.
And it is good news to become a Catholic. When I was Archbishop of Onitsha, we had about 24,000 baptisms in 1 year. So, and we have seminaries, and many bishops have the problem. They have no room in the seminary. The students are too many.
Yeah. It's a different situation than we face here in the United States.
Certainly. And I was thinking, Your Eminence, while you were talking, about the idea of what is it, what has changed, what is it that has brought about this springtime in Africa, that you see the large number of people becoming Catholic or Christian in general. Why do you think that's happening now?
Again, I will prefix it by saying that in divine providence, everything gets explained. Our explanations are only that of people a little like children babbling to explain an elephant when they touched only a little part of the animal. So, but what we could say is this. The African traditional religion, what people call sometimes tribal religions or animism, prepared the people wonderfully for the coming of Christianity. Ever before the missionaries came, most Africans had that religion where they believe in one God, one, then the spirits, good and bad, then the ancestors, and their religion was a worship of God, a worship of the spirits, and a worship of the ancestors, with prayer, with sacrifice, and with priesthood. So the arrival of the Catholic faith, particularly, fulfilled the desires of the human soul in Africa. It was like midday sunshine, as we have it today in Detroit, to people who were looking for light at 4 o'clock in the morning. So we could explain it providentially. The African traditional religion was a providential preparation for the coming of the message of Christ, Christianity, and especially Catholicism, with sacrifice and priesthood.
And priesthood there, Yeah, very good.
Also, I was thinking, Al, too, I wanted to, you know, it's great to see His Eminence as well, because we're proud on EWTN to once again have him featured on with Jerry Conacher's program for the Apostolate for Family Consecration and many, many programs. I remember way back 20 years plus, one of the earliest things I saw on Catholic television on EWTN was interviews with His Eminence, and I'm wondering, what was it about communications that you felt it was important for you to get involved so early on?
It isn't that I arranged the whole thing. It is simply that God, in His own way, arranges things, and we think we are arranging. But it is He who is arranging the whole stage. So you mentioned Jerry Conacher. It was he who came to Rome. I didn't do any special studies in mass communications. I only studied theology, and I was a priest. I taught for some time, and then I was a bishop, archbishop, and then I was called to Rome. But he asked me, invited me to his studios and interviewed me on the Catholic faith. And we went on that way. I was convinced that I reached more people at the microphone of Jerry Conacher than the priest thundering away on Sunday with a congregation of 500 or even 2,000, as in Nigeria. I reached more people, and probably with less effort, which means the modern media given us by divine providence, God inspired the human mind, science and technology, have given us means that St. Paul didn't have. If St. Paul had the modern means of communication, he would do much more than we are trying to do.
Let me ask you, because of your oversight of the sacramental life of the Church, in the United States, as you know, there have been some bitter disputes over the liturgy. Are we to expect any major changes in the liturgy in the near future?
I am not aware of any changes of apocalyptic proportions being arranged. I am not aware. But the Church is alive. The Church does not live in the Vatican Museum. The Church is alive. But our faith is the same. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and the same forever. Nevertheless, that same Church is alive in modern languages, also taking into account cultures. Probably people are thinking of the revision of the English translation of the Mass. But it is only one aspect.
No.
You know, the Church of the Latin Rite used to have all the celebrations in Latin up to the Second Vatican Council, 1962-65, which then said, look, modern languages can be useful, so let them be introduced. Mm-hmm. But Latin must not be sent to the ecclesiastical refrigerator. Mm-hmm. So Latin remains, but modern languages are admitted according to Church arrangements. Mm-hmm. So we began. Translations were made. After 30 years' experience, the Church realized the translations were not very exact.
Right.
So there was a directive from Pope John Paul II, transmitted to the Congregation for Divine Worship and Discipline of the Sacrament, that all translations are to be revised to make them more faithful to the original Latin, English, French, German, Italian, and so on. In Nigeria, we don't have many languages, only 240. So you just think not all of them are used in the liturgy. So it's only revision. But it isn't that our Catholic faith is under review.
Right.
Not at all.
Right.
It's simply to polish some of the responses so that where it was not very exact, for instance, the Lord be with you. And there were there was the response, and also with you.
Yeah.
But that was not faithful to the original Latin,
right.
Because the Latin is conspirator tour, and many people don't know why you said that, and with your spirit, which is said only to priests and deacons and bishops.
Hmm.
That's why in the liturgy, nobody below a deacon is allowed to say, "The Lord be with you." So it's the spirit they received at ordination. Many, not knowing it, are angry. Why you make a change? But there is a reason.
Yeah.
You may not know the reason, but the church was not born yesterday.
Right.
Those liturgical terms have some history and theology and spirituality behind them. This is the fine work being done.
Yeah.
So what people need is faith and also internal peace. And not to get agitated, and not to use political tactics to try to make people unhappy or make people afraid.
Yeah.
Do not be afraid.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Lord is there, even when he's sleeping in the boat.
has the United States been... has there been more controversy in the United States over liturgy than other countries?
No, I wouldn't say more controversy, but you are more awake.
Okay.
I was in the office for sacred liturgy.
Yeah.
The Catholic Bishops' Conference of the United States had been one of the best up and doing in matters liturgical.
Okay.
When we had the revision of the missal going on, when we got the texts, the United States Bishops' Conference texts were the most methodical and detailed.
Interesting.
Because they worked hard. Their office for liturgy had the excellent relations with the congregation in the Vatican. But of course, if you come to a bishops' conference where they get a whole document of 300 pages and their comment is, "It's all fine, we approve." Naturally, there's nothing to discuss. But where you have experts and people going, then people can disagree. That does not surprise anyone.
Okay.
Because even two excellent scholars who are saints can disagree on how to translate a word.
Mm-hmm.
And translation is a very difficult thing.
Yeah.
So let nobody be worried over that. It is only a sign of life. I do not mean that contradicting one another is a sign of life, but discussion and having another opinion is a sign of life, provided that we have faith, provided that those who are finally charged with overseeing the affairs of the church, when they have finally examined everything, it isn't just United States text for Mass.
Right.
It is
right.
11 bishops' conferences around the world, from U.S. and Canada and New Zealand, Australia and South Africa and Britain and Ireland. It's all of them working, the best brains in all of them. So you can't be, you are more secure than the money in the pocket of a miser. You are secure. There is no reason to fear at all.
Yeah. Learning to speak the truth in love and learning to speak truth in charity is what we have to do.
Yes, and also peace, much more being at peace. Knowing that in the church, you couldn't be more secure than in the church. I worked for 18 years in the office of the Catholic Church for contact with other religions. Many Catholics don't seem to be aware that the other religions envy us with a type of holy envy. They wish they were like us.
It's fascinating. And Doug, let me thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Great having you with me. And Your Eminence, I appreciate you taking the time with me today. Thank you.
I wish you well and all our hearers.
And my guest, Doug Keck, Chief Operating Officer of EWTN, who co-hosted this segment with me, and also His Eminence, Francis Cardinal Lorenzi. He is in both, Doug and His Eminence are in town for Holy Trinity Apostolate's 13th Annual Lenten Symposium, Charity and Truth is its theme this year. And I hope that if you're in Southeast Michigan, you're going to be participating in it. And at St. Cyril and Methodius, I'm Al Cresta. Thank you.
Ave Maria School of Law is a private law school faithful to the Catholic intellectual tradition. Located in Naples, Florida, Ave Maria gives you the opportunity to integrate faith and reason and seeks to educate the whole person by exploring the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law.
Our graduates are working in the nation's top law firms and judicial clerkships. Ave Maria School of Law provides financial scholarships. More information is available at avemarialaw.edu. Great schools are places where ideas come alive and get everyone involved. This is what Ave Maria University offers. Come and experience the fruits of a true liberal arts education at Ave Maria University. Unlike schools who take the faith for granted, the faith is the lifeblood of who we are. Ave Maria University, preparing students for success in this world and for never-ending joy in the next. Call 877-AVEU-NIV or click www.avemaria.edu. During this recession, many investors are afraid to invest in stocks or bonds. It may actually be a good time to invest, since prices are now low. At Ave Maria Mutual Funds, we believe our professional investment experts have positioned the portfolios to take advantage of the economic and market recovery we expect over the next few years. Now may be an opportune time to examine your portfolio and see if the Ave Maria Mutual Funds could help you achieve your goals. To learn more about the pro-life and pro-family Ave Maria Mutual Funds, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA to receive a free investor kit or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
I'm Al Cresta.
Thanks. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Doug and Cardinal Lorenzi. Last night, I'm poking around reading a little piece in Foreign Policy magazine, and it raises some questions that I hadn't considered for a while. In the Tibet, right? We have this idea that somehow the nation of Tibet and the Dalai Lama are models of purity. There's a certain idealism that has come down to us. I know Hollywood celebrities like Richard Gere, for instance, fighting for a free Tibet. And, many of us had to read James Hilton's novel, Shangri-La. Remember that? And so there's this kind of mystical vision of Tibet that fills our minds. Frankly, I know very little about Tibet. And in the absence of knowledge, my mind, and I know your mind too, our minds fill with images and impressions, and we pick up our assumptions. The way children pick up measles. It's just, if it's floating around in the air, and it just kind of creeps in. And we also have to remember that distortion of reality and presumptuous claims of knowledge are guaranteed by our enormous entertainment, advertising, and marketing industries. I mean, these are all calculated to persuade and adjust attitudes rather than to tell the truth. These industries that are so powerful are about images, not reality. So, for instance, Foreign Policy magazine, last night, I'm going looking at it, this particular article, asks the question, how much do Westerners really know about the Dalai Lama? And I thought, that is a good question. How much do Westerners really know about the Dalai Lama? And then they go on. His advocacy of an ethos of compassion and environmental protection are popular among his largely left-leaning Western admirers. while his more socially conservative views tend to be either unknown or selectively ignored. He is basically anti-abortion, except in rare circumstances, and he's ambivalent at best about homosexuality. And they quote a book here called Beyond Dogma, which is strikingly explicit in its sexual prohibitions. I don't think I want to read the whole quote here, given that I'd have to give some warnings. But suffice it to say, this is a very strict sexual ethic that he promotes in this book, Beyond Dogma. In some ways, it's actually far stricter than even the Catholic Church. Now, some people say that his remarks on these things, that he's softened up a little bit in recent years. Nevertheless, he is not what the largely left-wing idealistic Hollywood celebrities think he is. And it's very funny. I never want to belittle the earnest spiritual impulses that arise in any human heart. But I wonder, I mean, has somebody like Richard Gere, who periodically retreats to Tibet in pursuit of nirvana, I suppose, has he ever dealt with the Dalai Lama's views on abortion and sexual expression? How does a religious leader with such views capture the imagination of the most socially liberal and permissive strata of society? Now, it's not hard to imagine Buddhists like Tina Turner or Goldie Hawn or Uma Thurman or Jackie Chan in a lotus position. It is difficult to imagine their agreement with the Dalai Lama's moral theology. Maybe they reject the Dalai Lama as a spiritual master, and there's another Buddhist teacher that they adopt as dominant. But my guess is, regardless, they're sympathetic to the Dalai Lama's religio-political message, which is free Tibet. I'm thinking about this. I'm not against freeing Tibet, and I'm certainly not for the Chinese communists. But all these Hollywood celebrities are looking to a religious political leader, the Dalai Lama, to guide them in a major matter of foreign policy. I mean, Hollywood celebrities who complain that socially conservative Christians are a threat to the separation of church and state don't offer any resistance to a spiritual leader like the Dalai Lama, who's also the political figurehead of his occupied country. So you've got elite Hollywood Buddhists making the liberation of Tibet a cause celeb, and truth be told, most Americans can't locate Tibet on the map, and yet they'll tell pollsters that the Dalai Lama and his Tibet are being oppressed by the Chinese. Not denying that. I'm just saying a lot of our decision-making is based on images, things we really don't know much about. Now, Foreign Policy magazine is concerned about the politics of it all and questions what Tibetans are really calling for, rather than Buddhists in Hollywood. I thought the article, though, made if you think through it, makes some great points. What do we really know about what the Dalai Lama believes? And why is it that Hollywood folks who are so opposed to socially conservative Christians being politically active and are here sponsoring a religious political figure who's heavily influencing American foreign policy, or would like to heavily influence American foreign policy? Well, let me jump to a point of straight theology here, because John Paul II, in his book Crossing the Threshold of Hope, in fact, did address the question of Buddha. And John Paul II met with the Dalai Lama a few times, and he did regard him as the spiritual leader of the Tibetans. And he wrote in Crossing the Threshold of Hope, it is necessary to pay special attention to Buddhism, which, from a certain point of view, like Christianity, is a religion of salvation. It needs to be said right away that the doctrines of salvation in Buddhism and Christianity are opposed. So John Paul II wasn't afraid to, you know, lay out a thesis and acknowledge its antithesis. Life wasn't one big jumble, everything shading into its opposite. No, there's some things are this, some things are really that. John Paul II believed in the law of contradiction. It needs to be said right away that the doctrines of salvation in Buddhism and Christianity are opposed. The enlightenment experienced by Buddha comes down to the conviction that the world is bad, that it is the source of evil and suffering for man. To liberate oneself from this evil, one must free oneself from this world, and that necessitates a break with the ties that join us to external reality, ties existing in our human nature, ties existing in our psyche, ties existing in our bodies. And again, as the Pope John Paul II interprets Buddhism, the more we are liberated from these ties, the more we become indifferent to what is in the world, and the more we are freed from suffering, from the evil that has its source in the world. There's a very different approach to the world. In Christianity and Judaism both, the world is good. God created the world. God created it good. We're not trying to escape the world. We're trying to escape sin, but not the world. So Christians, in contrast, affirm the goodness of this space-time existence that we've got. They recognize sin disorders our hearts and twists our will. Our problem is a moral problem. It's not a metaphysical problem. It's not that we're living in the world. It's that we're living as sinners in the world. Just let me jump back here to the Buddhist rejection of the world, because John Paul II also says, do we draw near to God in this way? The fullness of such a detachment, he says, is not union with God, but what is called nirvana, a state of perfect indifference with regard to the world. It's a beautiful little section in Crossing the Threshold of Hope. He then goes on to talk about some texts from St. John of the Cross, and he says this doctrine of the Church does not merely propose detachment from the world. He proposes detachment from the world in order to unite oneself to that which is outside of the world. Not nirvana, but the personal God. Carmelite mysticism begins at the point where the reflections of Buddha end.
For 800 years, the Alexian brothers have served the sick, not as priests, but as Catholic brothers.
We're brothers because this is the life that God called us to.
In the struggle with alcohol or drugs or AIDS, the Alexian brothers are there.
We're looking for men who have the courage to live in vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. If a man is convinced that God has called him, then we have a spot for him.
If you feel a call to brother the world of the Alexians, call toll-free 1-800-556-0332.
Catholic Scripture Study International, also known as CSS, is faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. Commentaries are written by Scripture scholars and authors such as Scott Hahn and Steve Ray, with video lectures done by priests. Bible studies available for both individuals and groups. Details available at cssprogram.net or 1-877-228-7830.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
It's Lent. It's time for parish missions. Father Ricardo's mission this year is on personal evangelism and the normalcy of faith. It's about evangelizing our children, our extended families, our neighbors, and our co-workers. It's turning up the flame to set the world on fire. We'll have our first mission on Christ is the Answer this week. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Tim Burton's version of Alice in Wonderland hits theaters today, and Alice returns to the whimsical world she first encountered as a young girl. She's reunited with her childhood friends, the White Rabbit, Tweedledee, and Tweedledum, Dormouse, the Caterpillar, the Cheshire Cat, and, of course, the Mad Hatter. And then Alice embarks on a fantastical journey to find her true identity and end the Red Queen's reign of terror. Joining me right now to talk about Tim Burton's Alice, Stephen Gradonis, film critic for the National Catholic Register, a member of the Online Film Critics Society and the Promontory Film Critics Circle. His reviews appear regularly in Catholic World Report, American Outlook, EWTN, Catholic Exchange, and right here on Ave Maria Radio. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm fine. You write here that early in Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland comes the lament of the corset. It sounds like some sort of literary form.
Well, it's begun to stand out to me like a stock scene. There are these certain scenes that you encounter in movies repeatedly, and when you notice the pattern, it really stands out to you. My friend Jeff Overstreet helped me to notice that in the George Clooney movie Up in the Air, where we get the scene where he's trying to deliver a speech at a lectern, and we've seen him deliver the speech, and then all of a sudden he stops dead, and he can't finish, and he walks away. And it's a writer's shorthand for saying that he's changed as a character. And we have the same thing here with the corset in Alice in Wonderland. You know,
what does the corset tell us?
Well, there have been these scenes, and you might have noticed it in movies like Titanic or Pirates of the Caribbean. There's one in Ever After. It's always early in the movie, and often when we're establishing the heroine as spunky or oppressed or whatever.
A free spirit.
Exactly.
Anti-traditional.
We get lines like, "Of course it's unfair. We're women. Our choices are never easy." Or in the case of Pirates of the Caribbean, and we get this part at the end, "You like pain? Try wearing a corset." and this is, it's just a way of underscoring how greatly women suffer in patriarchal society, which is a very odd note for Alice in Wonderland to be striking.
Does Alice become then a figure of disillusionment with the world, a didactic feminist who's oppressed by patriarchy?
I think it would be going a little far to say that Alice herself becomes disillusioned with the world, although I think that the film definitely is. What we do get in Alice is what I'm going to call the squelched girl syndrome, and you can see this one also in Monsters versus Aliens. This is the narrative where you have a heroine who is perhaps once a vibrant young girl, but as she's grown up in patriarchal society, you know, the deck has been so stacked against her that she's been crushed down, and she's lost her zing. She's lost her mojo. In this movie, Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter comes right out and he says it. He says, "You are much muchier. You've lost your muchness." and so this is the story about how Alice has to recover what patriarchal society has taken away from her.
This is what you call squelch girl syndrome.
Yes, yes. All of this seems to be not so much Tim Burton's idea. He seems to be more interested in the fantastical images on the screen. But it does seem to be coming from the screenwriter, Linda Wolverton, who was one of the contributing writers on Arctic Tale, which had also had some nice pictures, but had a very kind of politically correct didactic streak to it, where we were clearly given to understand that even in the animal world, the females are the heroes and the males either can't quite cut it or they haven't really grown up or else they're just plain bullies.
Hmm. Well, how's a young girl to retain, or a young woman, how is she to regain her lost muchness?
Apparently, she has to go on a journey of self-discovery, and in this case, the movie doesn't find the inspiration for that in Alice in Wonderland. It goes to another work by Lewis Carroll, bizarrely, his poem Jabberwocky, in which those famous, lovely, nonsense adjectives like vorpal sword and frabjous day are inexplicably reinvented as all quasi-messianic proper nouns. All of a sudden, Alice is on what Joseph Campbell called the hero's journey, and she's destined. It's written that she will claim the Vorpal Sword, and then on the Frobjus Day, there's going to be this massive Lord of the Rings-style battle between the forces of Helena Bonham Carter's Red Queen and Anne Hathaway's White Queen, and Alice is going to be wearing shining armor like Joan of Arc, and then she's going to have to fight the ominous dread Jabberwocky, and they call it the Jabberwocky. Now, if you've read the poem, it's the Jabberwock. Jabberwock is the creature. Jabberwocky is the poem, but it's there in black and white. It's in the credits. They call it the Jabberwocky.
These strange phrases, these invented words, Frabjous Day or Vorpal Sword, what is the significance of the confused language? Is that meant to liberate the mind or the soul or something?
See, Lewis Carroll was a logician. He was a man in whom the life of the mind and the rigor of the intellect was very highly refined and developed. And what he does in both Alice in Wonderland and in Jabberwocky is to stand reason on its head. But you have to have reason in order to stand it on its head.
Right.
If you
right.
don't have reason, then it's just... It's nonsense for the sake of nonsense, which is very different from what Carroll did. Alice is a little logician when you read Alice in Wonderland. And so it's a wonderful tale of inverted reason. By liberating the form of language from the specific content, Carroll shows that you can tell a story that's perfectly understandable with nonsense words, and people know what it means.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, Tim Burton has taken it in a completely different direction.
He won't go there. Yeah. What is it about Tim Burton's style that people? I mean, some people love him. And others find that everything he touches turns dark.
It's interesting. There's another movie that's out on DVD this week, and in fact several, from another filmmaker with a very bizarre imagination, Hayao Miyazaki. Ponyo, his latest film, is out on DVD this week, and a number of his other films for family audiences, Kiki's Delivery Service, My Neighbor Totoro, and Castle in the Sky, are also out on DVD. Both of these filmmakers, Miyazaki and Burton, come up with surreal images that seem to come from someplace deep in the subconscious. They're very dreamlike images. And I appreciate the fantasy and the imagination that they both bring to their stories. Burton takes it in a very gothic direction, which a lot of people find to be very cool. Miyazaki goes in a more of a mythic direction.
Okay.
And I enjoy Miyazaki much more, needless to say.
Okay. Talk about the performances. You've mentioned Helena Bonham Carter. You mentioned Anne Hathaway. How are they in this?
I like Helena Bonham Carter. She's probably the most diverting thing in the film. She has this very large head that they've blown up to the size of a beach ball using digital technology, and she comes off. She's very imperious and she's a lot of fun. Her line readings are very snappish. Probably the second best performance in the movie is by a computer animated character, the Cheshire Cat, which I like very much. Crispin Glover does this weird Knave of Hearts riff. He he kept reminding me of Wormtongue in the Lord of the Rings, especially the way that he kind of is like stalking Alice as if she were Eowyn through the corridors of the Red Queen's castle. It's very weird.
Overall, you are not too big on the film.
I am not a fan. If your kids want to watch something fantastic, go out and get some of the Miyazaki DVDs that came out this week. I've got a new article up on my website about Miyazaki and reviews of the new films out on DVD. Alice in Wonderland is definitely one that you can skip.
All right. Well, that's just thumbs down then. Okay, fine.
Thumbs down.
Talk to us about Miyazaki, though. I don't think I know him very well. I've heard the name, but whenever you say it, I think of Miyagi from Karate Kid.
That's right, which they're doing a remake of that one, too, with Jackie Chan as Mr. Miyagi and Jaden Smith as the as Daniel, although I don't know if his name is still Daniel. But Hayao Miyazaki is unfortunately, he is unfamiliar to American audiences. It's part of the reason why I've put this article up on Miyazaki and his world. He is probably the most important living animator, at least in terms of his impact on the world and on popular culture. Even if you haven't seen his stuff, you have seen it mediated through the works of Pixar and other American animation, which has been tremendously influenced by him. He won an Academy Award in the early 2000s for Spirited Away, which many people think is his masterpiece.
Hmm.
Not all of his films are family-friendly, but four of them that are on new DVD shelves this week, starting with Ponyo, his most recent.
Ponyo. Okay, good. Now, that decentfilms.com, people can find your article there on Miyazaki and his world. You know, while I've got you, too, let me take advantage of the ask you a question.
We can talk about the Oscars.
Nah, we will do that. But actually, I'm going to indulge my own curiosity here because somebody suggested I watch this 10-part series called The Decalogue that was done by Krzysztof Kieslowski, the Polish director. And I'm going through them, and really, he's an amazing director, and these are amazing pieces. I especially like the very first one, and I'm increasingly confused, though, as I go through it, what the ultimate point of view is on this guy. Do you know?
Kieslowski was working at a time in Poland. This was in the very late 80s and in the last dying gasps of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to tell a story that treated the moral heritage of the Judeo-Christian culture seriously.
Yeah.
The stories are disturbing and challenging. They take moral questions seriously, but they raise it in the context of modern life. It's meant to get you thinking seriously about moral issues. Mm-hmm. They correspond very roughly to the Ten Commandments.
Right.
You can see that the Catholic enumeration of the commandments is definitely being followed.
Yes, that's right.
Number five is a short film on killing. One of the 15 films in the values category in the Vatican Film List, the 1995 Vatican Film List, and also the Arts and Faith community has just released its 2010 list of the top 100 films.
I saw it. Yeah.
List also,
and it's on that list. Yeah, that's again, it's serious film.
Absolutely.
This is not your you know, blockbuster, but it is provocative, and also you get a feel for Polish communism in late 1980s. Stephen, thank you so much.
Ave Maria School of Law is a private law school faithful to the Catholic intellectual tradition. Located in Naples, Florida, Ave Maria gives you the opportunity to integrate faith and reason and seeks to educate the whole person by exploring the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law. Our graduates are working in the nation's top law firms and judicial clerkships. Ave Maria School of Law provides financial scholarships. More information is available at avemarialaw.edu. Great schools are places where ideas come alive and get everyone involved. This is what Ave Maria University offers. Come and experience the fruits of a true liberal arts education at Ave Maria University. Unlike schools who take the faith for granted, the faith is the lifeblood of who we are.
Ave Maria University, preparing students for success in this world and for never-ending joy in the next. Call 877-AVEU-NIV or click www.avemaria.edu.
Hi, this is Tom Lowy, and I'm inviting you to join me, along with Al Cresta, Steve Ray, and a host of other people, on Ave Maria Radio's pilgrimage to the great churches of Toledo on Saturday, March the 20th. The cost is only $99 per person, and seats are going fast. We've already filled up one bus, and we're working on filling up another one right now. You won't want to miss this. It's a one-day Lenten tour. We stay for Mass at Holy Rosary Cathedral in downtown Toledo and visit with Bishop Leonard Blair. We'll travel to St. Patrick's Church, St. Stephen's Church, and the Church of the Immaculate Conception, three of the most beautiful houses of worship in the country. We'll also have lunch at Tony Paco's. I mean, what more could you ask? It's a very special day, and we want you to come along. So reserve your seat right now before it's too late. Call Corporate Travel at 313-565-8888, extension 121, or go to our Holy Toledo website at avemariaradio.net.
Good afternoon. Thanks. It's good being with you over the last hour, and good being with you over the last 2 hours. Tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, EWTN. It's the World Over Live with Raymond Arroyo. Be able to see it on television, hear it on radio. And Lord willing, I'll be back next week for another edition of this thing we call Crest in the Afternoon. If you're in Southeast Michigan, I hope you'll join Cardinal Francis Arinze, Doug Keck, and a host of others at Holy Trinity Apostolate's Lenten Symposium. Information at the website, avemariaradio.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineers are Kara Coulter and Anne-Marie Parisot. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at avemariaradio.net. That's AVEMARIA radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Hello friends, this is Jeff Cavins. Are you looking for an authentically Catholic Bible study program that really works? One that will ignite a passion in the hearts and minds of you and your fellow parishioners? If yes, then The Great Adventure is for you. The Great Adventure is a turnkey Catholic Bible study system that has been adopted by thousands of parishes across the country and throughout the world. Best of all, The Great Adventure makes your parish planning efforts easy. From engaging Bible studies that all bear the imprimatur of the Catholic Church, to our free marketing materials and extensive leader support with live Bible study consultants, we have everything you need to implement what will be one of the most effective parish adult faith formation programs you've ever experienced. To learn how you can review the program risk-free, the number is 1-800-376-0520 or visit AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Great Adventure banner. God bless you.
Old St. Patrick's, take one.
Hi, I'm Father Gerald, pastor of Old St. Patrick's Church. You know, out there on Whitmore Lake Road. I'd like to invite you, your family and friends, to join us for the oldest fish fry in the county.
Want to rephrase that?
Well, not the oldest fish, of course. We serve the most mild and delicious Alaskan pollock at the longest running fish fry in the county.
Sounds great.
We start serving dinner at 4:30. And you know, After dinner,